Hi, everybody. This is Language Soup with DJ Super Salad. This is show number 639,427. Today we have guest Con Hart in the studio. We're going to be talking a little bit about language in a little while. But first, I have a few songs. The theme today is kind of like fantasy worlds or something. Or some of the songs are just kind of nutty and crazy. Here's one called The Element Song by Tom Lehrer.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, and protactinium, and indium, and gallium, and iodine, and thorium, and thulium, and thallium. There's yttrium, ytterbium, actinium, rubidium, and boron, gadolinium, niobium, iridium, and strontium, and silicon, and silver, and samarium, and bismuth, bromine, lithium, beryllium, and barium. There's holmium, and helium, and hafnium, and erbium, and phosphorus, and francium, and fluorine, and terbium, and manganese, and mercury, molybdenum, magnesium, dysprosium, and scandium, and cerium, and cesium, and lead, praseodymium, and platinum, plutonium, palladium, promethium, potassium, polonium, and tantalum, technetium, titanium, tellurium, and cadmium, and calcium, and chromium, and curium. There's sulfur, californium, and fermium, berkelium, and also mendelevium, einsteinium, nobelium, and argon, krypton, neon, radon, xenon, zinc, and rhodium, and chlorine, carbon, cobalt, copper, tungsten, tin, and sodium. These are the only ones of which the news has come to Harvard. And there may be many others, but they haven't been discovered.
That was Tom Lehrer with the Element Song. I listened pretty closely, and those are the real elements. If you listen to the lyrics, it's really the elements. If you live in the world, you want to know what stuff is made of, it's a good song. You remember what things are. Just been listening to some crazy music lately, so I found this song, Roger Miller, I'm a Nut.
I'm a nut, I'm a nut, my life don't ever get in a rut. The head on my shoulders is sort of loose, and I ain't got sense, God gave a goose. Lord, I ain't crazy, but I'm a nut. Is it wetter underwater if you're there when it rains? Is it shorter to New York than it is by plane? Between myself and I wonder who's the dumber. Is it hotter down south than it is in the summer? I'm a nut, I'm a nut, my life don't ever get in a rut. The head on my shoulders is sort of loose, and I ain't got sense, God gave a goose. Lord, I ain't crazy, but I'm a nut. I drove my Cadillac to Vegas to satisfy my lust. Wheel and deal and left old Vegas on a Greyhound bus. I sure didn't set the woods on fire while I was there, but remember, only forest fires prevent bears. Deep, deep, bop, 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 bop. I'm a nut, I'm a nut, my life don't ever get in a rut. The head on my shoulders is sort of loose, and I ain't got sense, God gave a goose. Lord, I ain't crazy, but I'm a nut. The poverty war will be over when I begin to fight. If it took a dime to go around the world, I couldn't get out of sight. I don't mind to take the girls out if they don't mind to go Dutch. Makes me feel like $1 million, and I bet I ain't worth half that much. I'm a nut, I'm a nut, my life don't ever get in a rut. The head on my shoulders is sort of loose, and I ain't got sense, God gave a goose. Lord, I ain't crazy, but I'm a nut.
It was pretty crazy. You'd think Roger Miller has a lot of crazy songs. You'd think he'd be like a happy guy And apparently his life was not always silly and happy. But he wrote some pretty funny songs. I found that song because I was looking for a song that I remembered from my youth. There was like, I call myself on the telephone just to see if I am home. Actually, I was thinking about Gascon Hart was said he was going to say something about the self-reflexive vocative or something like that. And so I was trying to find songs that had some kind of element like that. And then I got off on kind of a YouTube wormhole of just different things and found self-vocative. He can tell us what that means later on. But I was trying to find some songs that evoke that, whatever that is. I don't think I found any, but I got some pretty crazy songs. And I was just thinking about language, as always. And I like these songs where the song is going to lead you in a certain direction, it seems like, and then something crazy happens, like this one. This is called Shaving Cream by Benny Bell.
I have a sad story to tell you. It may hurt your feelings a bit. Last night when I walked into my bathroom, I stepped in a big pile of shaving cream. Be nice and clean. Shave every day and you'll always look keen. I think I'll break off with my girlfriend. Her antics are queer, I'll admit. Each time I say, darling, I love you, she tells me that I'm full of shaving cream. Be nice and clean. Shave every day and you'll always look keen. Our baby fell out of the window. You'd think that her head would be split. But good luck was with her that morning. She fell in a barrel of shaving cream. Be nice and clean. Shave every day and you'll always look keen. An old lady died in a bathtub. She died from a terrible fit. In order to fulfill her wishes, she was buried in 6 feet of shaving cream. Be nice and clean. Shave every day and you'll always look keen. When I was in France with the army, one day I looked into my kit. I thought I would find me a sandwich, but the darn thing was loaded with shaving cream. Be nice and clean. Shave every day and you'll always look keen. And now, folks, my story is ended. I think it is time I should quit. If any of you feel offended, stick your head in a barrel of shaving cream. Be nice and clean. Shave every day and you'll always look keen.
That's the kind of joke that I can't get enough of that. And I guess Benny Bell, all of his songs have that same kind of just kind of poopy humor. Like this one is called Take a Ship.
Every time we take a trip, you always get my goat. I like trains and buses, but you like a ferry boat. Well, the next time we go traveling, ships are out, I now declare. You go your way, I'll go mine, I'll meet you over there. You take a ship for yourself. I'll go by train by myself. If you can't fly in planes or ride in buses or in trains, then go take a ship for yourself. Take a battleship, an excursion ship, or a fishing ship will do. And if you can't take a big ship, then take a small canoe. Bon voyage to you, my friend. I'll meet you at the journey's end. If you like briny seas, the rolling waves, an ocean breeze, then go take a ship for yourself. Gives you pleasure, but it gives me an awful pain. Sailing is sailing, isn't it lovely weather? Perhaps I'll change my mind and we'll both take a ship together. An excursion ship or a fishing ship will do. And if you can't take a big ship, then take a small canoe. Bon voyage to you, my friend. I'll meet you at the journey's end. If you like briny seas, rolling waves, an ocean breeze, then go take a ship for yourself.
Kind of sounds like somebody with a ship fetish. Here's Henry Hall and his orchestra with the Teddy Bear's Picnic.
If you go down in the woods today, you're sure of a big surprise. If you go down in the woods today, you'd better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day the teddy bears have their picnic. Teddy bear who's been good is sure of a treat today. There's lots of marvelous things to eat and wonderful games to play. Beneath the trees where nobody sees, they'll hide and seek as long as they please. That's the way the teddy bears have their picnic. Picnic time for teddy bears. The little teddy bears are having a lovely time today. Watch them, catch them unawares, and see them picnic on their holiday. See them gaily gad about. They love to play and shout, they never have any cares. At 6 o'clock, their mummies and daddies will take them home to bed, 'cause they're tired little teddy bears. If you go down in the woods today, you'd better not go alone. It's lovely down in the woods today, but safer to stay at home. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day the teddy bears have their picnic.
I have some questions about the song. It sounds like it's dangerous to go out today because it's the teddy bear's picnic. Does that mean they eat people, or what well, you know, why not just go out and join the picnic? Second thing, the teddy bears have to go home. They're sleepy at the end of the picnic because their parents picked them up. But the parents are not described as teddy bears themselves. Is this some kind of genetics experiment? Were the teddy bears simply adopted from Teddy Bear Land? Or, like, what is the relationship between the teddy bears and the rest of the world? Is this some kind of a fantasy world? Or is this just happens in, like, my backyard or something? Is it, sounds like some kind of special Teddy Bear Land. But if that's true, why would the song be warning me about it? I would be in no danger of going there and being eaten by a teddy bear. But I wanted to do a little bit more research on these kinds of candy fantasy lands. Found another song called The Big Rock Candy Mountains. Harry McClintock.
Sun went down and the jungle fire was burning. Down the track came a hobo hiking, and he said, "Boys, I'm not turning. I'm headed for a land that's far away, beside the crystal fountains. So come with me, we'll go and see the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, there's a land that's fair and bright, where the handouts grow on bushes and you sleep out every night, where the boxcars all are empty and the sun shines every day on the birds and the bees and the cigarette trees, the lemonade springs where the bluebird sings in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, all the cops have wooden legs and the bulldogs all have rubber teeth and the hens lay soft-boiled eggs. The farmer's trees are full of fruit and the barns are full of hay. Oh, I'm bound to go where there ain't no snow, where the rain don't fall, the wind don't blow, in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, you never change your socks, and the little streams of alcohol come a-trickling down the rocks. The brakemen have to tip their hats and the railroad bulls are blind. There's a lake of stew and a whiskey too. You can paddle all around them in a big canoe in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. In the Big Rock Candy Mountains, the jails are made of tin, and you can walk right out again as soon as you are in. There ain't no short-handled shovels, no axes, saws, or picks. I'm a-going to stay where you sleep all day, where they hung the Turk that invented work in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. I'll see you all this coming fall in the Big Rock Candy Mountains.
Well, how does he know he's going to see us all? That's a little bit presumptuous. I mean, anyway, that sounded a little bit different from the teddy bear land. But I was thinking of, I had this sort of like in at the tip of my tongue or at the back of my mind or something. I thought, wasn't there some other song about that was not cigarette trees, that was some other kind of teddy type of candy type of song? I didn't find it. I found this, The Great Lollipop Adventure, Sweet Celebration, Candyland, some kind of a kids cartoon or something. I don't know what this is. I stumbled upon it, and I apologize in advance, but I have to play this.
Sweet adventure begins today. Oh, how lovely we know it will be. In the great hills of candy we'll laugh and play. Then we'll race to the ginger bread tree. Soon we will follow the rainbow road as it winds by the peppermint streams. We will always remember the way it flows. When it first came to life in our dreams. World's a fun ways in candy land. We will run through the hand in hand. Life is jolly in candy land. And we are all invited. along, come along. There's a sweet celebration, we just can't wait. Hurry, hurry, there's so much to do. We will all come together to celebrate, for the magic will make our home new.
I don't know what the hell that was. I mean, first of all, sucrose is an addictive substance. It's something that your body doesn't really need extra sugar in that form. If you need some sugar, eat some fruit. Even drinking too much fruit juice is bad for you. So I don't know what kind of message that song is sending to our kids. Have an adventure in Candyland. The description of the land is just like it's filled with candy. I don't think it's very healthy. I wouldn't recommend going to this place. I just stumbled upon that song. I don't know what it is. I did find the opposite of the song called Candyland Blues.
Thank you.
I don't know. That was called Candyland Blues. You might not see the connection. I don't know why it's called that. I just found that. And I found the previous song pretty annoying. Probably pretty soon I'm going to call up Gascon Hart, the resident SDF linguist, so that he can talk to us about the self-vocative, whatever that is, some kind of nerd thing, probably. But, you know, we'll let him say, you know, he thinks he knows something about language, so... yeah, well, he's very learned about those things. So we'll listen to him yammer about it a little bit. Let me play one more thing here. Do we have anything else? I had some, I don't know. These are just random things today. I found this Shel Silverstein song. Yeah, let's have it. Let's do it. And then I think I'm going to try to call Gascon Hart and see if he wants to tell us some nerd things about language.
Well, a long time ago, when the earth was green, and there was more kind of animals than you've ever seen, and they run around free while the world was being born, and the loveliest of all was the unicorn. There was green alligators and long-necked geese. There was humpback camels and there was chimpanzees. There was cats and rats and elephants. But sure as you're born, the loveliest of all was the unicorn. Well, now God seen some sinning and it caused him pain. He says, stand back, I'm gonna make it rain. Says, hey, Brother Noah, I'll tell you what to do. Go and build me a floating zoo. And you take two alligators, a couple of geese. You take two humpback camels and two chimpanzees. You take two cats and rats and elephants. But sure as you're born, Noah, don't you forget my unicorn. Well, then Noah was there and answered the calling, and he finished up the ark just as the rain started falling. He marched in the animals two by two and called out as they went through, hey Lord, I got you two alligators, a couple of geese, I got you humpback camels and two chimpanzees, I got you cats and rats and elephants. But Lord, I'm so forlorn, cause I just don't see no unicorn. Well, Noah looked out through the driving rain. The unicorns was hiding, playing silly games. They were kicking and splashing while the rain was pouring. Oh, them silly unicorn. Yeah, two alligators, a couple of geese, two humpback camels and two chimpanzees. Noah cried, close the door, cause the rain is pouring, and we just can't wait for no unicorn. And the ark started moving, and it drifted with the tide. And the unicorns looked up from the rock and cried. And the water come up and sort of floated them away. That's why you've never seen a unicorn to this day. You'll see lots of alligators and a whole mess of geese. You'll see plenty of humpback camels, lots of chimpanzees. You'll see cats and rats and elephants. But sure as you're born, you're never gonna see no unicorn.
That was Shel Silverstein doing a unicorn song. He was a pretty interesting character. Speaking of interesting characters, I have Gascon Hart here in the studio with me. And I think all the mics, all the buttons and everything are connected. And so I think you will be able to hear him. And welcome to the show once again, Gaz Khan Hart.
Okay, thanks for having me, and it's a pleasure being here at the studio with you doing the show. Yeah, fantastic, fantastic. Thank you, man.
Yeah, so you're going to give us a wrap-up, what you did. You were here a couple of weeks ago.
Exactly, yes, yes. Well, last time I talked to you about the explanation or theory about the possible origins for the name, for the boogeyman in four languages in Europe.
Yeah.
And there's a major flaw in the reasoning, because languages succeed one after the other. They replace one another. They evolve. They transform themselves, or they replace one another altogether. And that is every single region, part of the world whatsoever.
Yeah.
500-600 years ago in your weird North American country, there was thousands of different languages, native languages, and almost all of them have been replaced by that weird form of English that you guys speak. So one of the flaws in my theory is that it assumes that for over 1500 years, all the languages have evolved, have changed, or have replaced one another in, let's say, in all those regions. Another thing I'm from France, Italy, the Ukraine, and I'm forgetting one, and the Balkans. Yes. So all the languages have evolved, replaced one another, etc., etc. But somehow, one weird word, only one word, persists. That didn't happen ever. That hasn't happened ever in the history of language.
Okay.
So it's also very likely that it's just by chance that in Romanian, some dialectal Italian, in Gascon, and more or less in Ukrainian, there is the same, possibly the same word for the boogeyman. It may be just
a coincidence.
Just a coincidence. Yeah.
But that's not a very satisfying explanation.
No, it is not. It is not, and that is why my mind tried to make some sense of it.
Yeah.
And I found some pieces of the puzzle, but it is not satisfactorily solved, not by a long shot. So all the languages spoken in Italy, in southern France, in Romania, along the centuries, along the millennia, have changed, have disappeared, etc., etc. But somehow, the word for the boogeyman should. That's not reasonable. So that's what I wanted to add about the name for the boogeyman, because as everything in paleolinguistics, this is not real science, and you will find flaws all over the way when you try to do research, or rather speculation, in paleolinguistics. That is all I wanted to add about that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome. You're welcome. It's my pleasure speaking about this.
I still have a lot of questions about culturally what the boogeyman represents for people, not just linguistically, but what is he? You know, you said last time, or whenever it was, you said, okay, he's a guy, he comes and he steals kids in a bag or something.
Yeah.
But, I think there's still a lot, still a lot of room for, like, imagination there. Like, who the hell is this guy?
Exactly.
Does he take him back? Does he eat the kids? Or, you know, he's got some other, he's delivering these kids to some, wallet company or something.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Those are all good questions, and next time you can have some anthropologists in your show and ask them. Yeah,
I should do that. Yeah,
I found very interesting that usually or sometimes a boogeyman is a recycled, repurposed former god. That to me is very interesting. I told you the other day.
Is that your personal theory, or is that some kind of well-attested thing?
It's something attested, yes. No, it's not my idea.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, the boogeymen sometimes are former gods. Yeah, so I can firmly bet that in some thousand years, Jesus Christ will be just a boogeyman. I'm positive.
Yeah, but I don't see him as having very, he's not very scary, you know.
Does it need to be scary?
If he's a boogeyman, I mean, that would be the, otherwise, because it's not the actual boogieing capability that makes the boogeyman scary, it's the threat of it, right? And if he's not scary, then... Because if he were if he looked kind, but he eats you, but you wouldn't know that. You know, you have to have that the fear, the face of the boogeyman is the most important thing. Yes. What he actually does is not really relevant.
I see. Yes. It doesn't need to have a scary aspect, a scary look. No, it doesn't have to have that necessarily. In other cultures, I told you, instead of a humanoid tangible being, it is a ghostly figure or
that's a pretty dwarf. Scary.
Yeah, it's also scary.
A ghostly figure. I mean, that's.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. What kinds of things are you afraid of?
that's right. I think I would fear more a humanoid boogeyman, a tangible boogeyman, rather than a ghostly one. Me personally. Yeah.
No, you know what would be? I think the scariest monsters are the ones that invade your mind, like a vampire or something.
Like a vampire.
Yeah, like that has some kind of a mind control.
If it's just
something like a zombie, you can fight it off, right?
That is correct. Zombies are slow and
they're just dumb, you know. I watched that movie the other day, Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn, okay.
The sequel to Night of the Living Dead.
Okay.
The George Romero film that started the whole zombie film thing, right?
Okay.
It's a pretty good movie. Yeah.
I watched Shaun of the Dead.
I've seen Shaun of the Dead. It was okay. I don't know. I'm not that into that, whatever that actor is. He's not one of my, you know, you kind of have actors that resonate with you and that are like your people that you watch. And he's, somehow his style of comedy doesn't quite do it for me.
To make a movie enjoyable somehow. Yes, that is correct.
Yeah.
Okay, man, can I?
Oh, you're going to tell us about the self-vocative?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Let's do it.
It has a human story behind. I think I may have told you the story the other day on the chat. Anyway, I will tell all our listeners about the story. I was living in Romania, and one of my favorite pastime was to go with a literal bag to the flea market to buy old books.
That's to buy old the, what?
Old book.
Old book?
Book.
Book?
So, yeah. So that was my pastime. And in 1999, I was in a flea market in Romania. I bought a book on grammar, Romanian grammar.
Okay.
Which I didn't read right away, and it was written in 1989. So I bought it 10 years later.
Yeah, you didn't buy it before it was written. That would be impossible.
That would be quite a feat. it was not the case. So I didn't read that book, and I regret somehow I didn't read it earlier because I put my hands on it.
You sure have a long-winded way of telling a story.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
So, 20 years later, shut the hell up, man. 20 years later, in 2019, I read that book, which I bought 20 years earlier, which had been written 30 years earlier. Man, that was a book that changed my...
What did you even just say? You bought a book? You bought a book on Romanian grammar.
Yes.
And it took you a while to read it? Is that your point?
Yes.
And you put it in a bag when you bought it at the flea market.
I did, yes, alongside many other books. And how would say, mud.
Mud?
Mud, yes, the books were dirty. Yes.
Oh, okay.
I still have some of those wrapped in a newspaper, in a newspaper. And there is book and also mud or dirt inside, which I, to this day I did not open to clean.
Okay.
Damn,
I didn't expect... I thought it was just like you bought them on a shelf or something.
Yes, well, some I put on shelves, some I do have.
And some are in mud.
yes, exactly. Mud. Yeah. So dry mud. probably it's dirt now. I don't know. Anyway, that book I began reading in 2019, and it was a very well written book.
Yeah.
I usually don't like to read, despite the fact I love to read, because authors are jerks.
Because authors are jerks?
Jerks are stupid.
Okay.
Writers are lame. Unlike authors that don't take into account the intelligence of the reader. So I get pissed off very easily with a poorly written book. And believe me, brother, those abound. And one is not the case. This author, the author of this Romanian grammar book, has a style. He writes in, let's say, it's like a thesis, an affirmation that he discusses. Can this be true? What other possible options are there?
Yeah.
And after argumentation, he chooses the right one. And it is like this all along. All the book is an affirmation. Like for example, that.
I don't understand what you're saying.
You do not. You pay attention, son. So, guy, right? Like.
I just don't understand what you're talking about. It's a.
I'm
like,
talking about the style this guy has as a writer.
All right.
For example, he says this word is an adjective and not a pronoun because, and then his argumentation.
And he just tells you, and then he just goes on.
Exactly.
So no and bullshit, grammar, just the facts.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And then he considers the other possibility, and he says, he explains why that is not correct, why that could not be correct. So it is a book that is appealing constantly to the mind of the reader, to the intelligence of the reader. And that, my man, is something I do like. So after reading that marvelous book,
well, wait, you didn't tell the name of the book or the author.
The book, I think, is just Romanian grammar, and the author is... it doesn't need to be very original. It was that. Grammar of the Romanian language, I think. Yes.
Yeah,
grammar
okay.
And the author is Mr. or Dr. Gavrila Nemtsov.
All right.
So
write it down, everybody.
What?
I said write it down so people can.
Yes, the people in the archive can hear me.
They can go. Exactly. We've got like 22 listeners. Probably everybody's going to go out tomorrow and try to get this book. And, the bookstore people. Why does everybody keep asking for this Romanian grammar book?
No, it was a success. I didn't even know that.
Probably the author will call you up and say, "Oh, we hadn't sold any of these books in 20 years," and then suddenly we got a huge boost.
No, it was reprinted. It was a success.
Yeah, they got some guy. They call him up in his garage. Y'all got any more of those Romanian grammar books left? And then he's dusts one off and puts it in the mailbox. Puts it in the mail.
Yeah, something like that. So I asked myself, can this guy be alive today? The book was written 30 years earlier.
Yeah.
I didn't even know about that professor not at all. So I Googled. Or I used my search engine of choice. I went it. And I found him.
Yeah.
That guy, but that time, also had a radio show on the local radio station.
Oh, really?
Yes. And he was alive. An old man. And I emailed him, and I told him about his book and how much I enjoyed reading it.
Did you tell him that it had mud on the book?
Yes. So the guy was, I think, touched more or less by my gesture. And I told him, well, I live in Spain, and I know. The conversation went a little personal. Why not? So
sure.
I mentioned.
Yeah.
Then I told him.
You started dating.
Living. And he said, well, what do you know? Next month, I will be vacationing in such and such town, which is.
Had you met the guy?
Later on, yes. And I sent you pictures then in the summer of 2019. I sent you pictures. The very same day.
Okay.
You and Matt F. And it was a place very close to where I live. And coincidentally, what do you know? The exact same place where I was vacationing.
So, wow.
Yeah. So we were at, 100 meters away at the Spanish beach.
And wow, so, 100 meters. Did he let you get closer for a photo or anything?
So we exchanged telephone numbers.
We
spoke, and we met. One day we met at the Spanish beach, and we talked about many things, about grammar, science. We even had common acquaintances.
Really?
Romanian linguist that I profoundly admire, Eugen Coșeriu.
Okay.
He worked briefly for him in the 70s when he was.
Wow! What a small world.
What a small world! Yeah.
I'm the guy who read your book.
Okay. Well.
Wow, that's an incredible story, though.
Yes, it is. It is, and so I wanted to impress this guy.
Yeah.
And I can say that I did, because I talked to him about the Romanian self-vocative.
Oh, all right. Okay, this was all the intro to today's topic.
Yes, he was not aware of that. But let me tell you, the other day you yourself asked me, what does it mean that a language has,
Well, we were talking about vocative as a case or not.
Or whatever. Exactly. What does it mean that a given language has a given
what
case.
What does it mean for something to be a case?
Exactly.
I think was the question.
Yes. So one of the primary criteria is that it has to be fully differentiated from other cases. Otherwise, it is not a real case. Otherwise, it is a function of a different case. And this is the case with the self-vocative, because it does not have its own marks, own things, and so on.
Yeah.
It is really a function of the Romanian vocative. However, it is still interesting because self-vocative means that you are naming yourself. Let me remind your listeners that a vocative is that noun, usually a noun, or another word that is playing the part of a noun.
Yeah.
So you use to name the person you are speaking to. If I say, "How are you, brother?" Brother is the vocative, right?
If I hit myself with a hammer and I say, "Hammer, why did you hurt me?" or something.
Hammer would be a vocative, yes. Yes,
yeah, if I have, like, I can talk to an object and say, you know, O cup, be filled or something.
Yeah. O Canada.
O Canada. Canada. Yeah, exactly. It's right. Yeah.
O Canada. So those are vocatives. And in the case of English, it is a function of a caseless thing, because you guys don't have a real
time. We don't really have cases.
Yeah, you have the Saxon genitive, which is not a case, like, it's not a property of a noun, but a property of a syntagm. So it's a different thing. English, I couldn't say that as cases. So in English, it is a function of the nominative or caseless thing. But in languages like Romanian or Bulgarian or Latin and others, there was or there is a real vocative with a differentiation from other cases. And the self-vocative is not differentiated from others. It is a function of the nominative or vocative in Romanian.
English still has a vocative. In a sense, if you say, like, "Man, I'm so tired," or something.
Yeah, but that word, "man," is actually a noun. It's just a noun used as a vocative. That's what I say.
So that's why it's not a case, because it's not, there's not anything different. Okay.
Yeah, you can speak about the function of the vocative, but not the vocative case.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, for example, Romanian has real cases. For example, "friend" in Romanian is "amic," but if you're addressing your friend, you would say "amice."
Okay.
"Bună amic," that means "hello, friend." "Amic" means friend, but "amice" means friend whom I'm talking right now, who I'm talking to right now.
Oh, so okay.
"Amice."
"Amice."
Right. "Amice." Yes. That's an Italian.
Amici.
Okay. So Romanian has that weird thing that sometimes people name themselves when talking.
Okay.
That is extremely weird, and it works for with a very few words that indicate a kinship. Family for family members, for example, father, mother, grandma, and grandpa. And I don't think I've heard other in that context. So, a father talking to their son, to his son, instead of saying, "Son, how are you?" in Romanian, can say, "Father, how are you?" And I repeat, the father talking to the son, he can say, "Dad, how are you?" He is naming himself, not the person they are speaking to.
Yeah.
And that's very common in Romanian. It hasn't been noticed. I've read a lot on Romanian grammar. It hasn't been mentioned, studied, he hasn't even noticed. I told this guy in my interview with him in the speech, he was not aware of that. However, in his vast knowledge, he gave some examples of a formal version of the self-vocative. When you say, in any language, Romanian, English, Spanish, when you say, me, the undersigned, declares that blah, blah, blah. Well, that's the self-vocative. You're speaking to in written, but you're, right? You're addressing someone, but you're naming yourself. Very intelligent from this.
So when you say, Dad, how are you? And it's, you're talking to your son.
Yes.
You're saying Dad as the son is the one that's you're saying as Dad?
Well, I had a debate with Adrian the other day.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would say that the person is naming themselves. Adrian says that no, he is actually changing roles and naming the kid, but using the role of the speaker.
Well,
I don't know.
What happens next? The dad says, Dad, how are you? And then does he also say, I'm fine? Or does the kid answer?
Awesome question. I wasn't expecting something like that. Awesome question. No, the conversation follows normally. The kid replies, answers, I'm fine, Dad, something like that.
No, but it was as if he's being asked, not... Warning, the dad is not asking himself, right?
No. They're not asking themselves. No, he's not. It's not.
Okay.
And as the referee, just like in the NFL, is telling us that there is a 2-minute warning.
Yeah, I think I just saw it. So I guess we'll have to pick this up again next time.
I'm over.
That's it for the self-vocative?
Yeah, that is everything I want to do.
Me. Well, maybe we'll have you back again anyway, and we talk about some other kind of thing.
Perhaps, yes, sure. I would love to. Yes.
Okay. Well, thanks for being on again. Gascon Hart, the SDF resident linguist, talking about his nerdy language stuff. Thanks for being on again.
Thank you.
Okay, what a nerd.
I always like to end on a positive note. Uplifting song. Which is guaranteed to cheer you up. When you attend a funeral, it is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry. No more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you... Evening will...